So we might sacrifice you for Zibra. Okay, good afternoon, gentlemen. Be'ezus Hashem, we are going to begin our Chazara for fall semester of 2016 Contemporary Halakha. We're going to be going through each year. We will not finish the Chazara today from past experience, given the number of shiurim and the amount of time that takes the Chazar even quickly. It usually takes two shiurim. We'll have our second half of the Chazara take place Monday, possibly Tuesday. I will let you know on the emails. I hope you'll be able to make it. If you can't, you can't. If you can, you can. All these shiurim will be posted online, of course. If you have questions, if they relate something quick related to a very point just to clarify, please ask. Otherwise, please don't ask, so we could move rapidly through this. We're going to begin with Hilchas Yom Tov with Rabbi Neuberger. The first yesod is to know that lighting fire midoraisa is mutter on Yom Tov. However, Chacham came and said that this is a drabanan. Machlokas, one more point. The goal of today's shir is not just to say over what the Rebbeim said, but hopefully to take each shir that the Rebbe said and divide it into the two, three, four, five main topics in your brains. You realize that there were four topics covered. I will hopefully introduce it and structure it like that for you, in addition to knowing the material itself. So when it comes to, now we're going to talk about gas stoves, fires on Yom Tov. So it's mutter d'oraisa to light fires. However, the question is, why did Chachamim say that it's usher to light a fire l'chatchila on Yom Tov? So this machlokas rishona. The Rambam writes, because the only opal nefesh that's mutter to do on Yom Tov is that which is e'ef shal asos ha'me'esmol. You could have had your fire, your gacheles from yesterday, you didn't. So that's going to be usher d'rabbanan. However, Rashi and Tosfos hold that even everything is mutter l'tzorech ochel nefesh, even if you could have done a me'esmol. The reason why it's aser to light a fire, l'chatchila midrabanan, is because of molid, a new issa drabanan called molid. Now, once we talk about, now finish talking about lighting a fire l'chatchila, let's talk about being mamshech a flame. Of course, since you're allowed to be mamshech on Yom Tov, so if you have an old pilot light like many stoves in the Heights, you can turn on your pilot stove because there's already a little bit of a fire there. You just be mamshech by extending the fire. However, those of you who have newer stoves with an electric igniter where there's no flame there, you're going to have a problem of lighting a fire if you want to turn that on Yom Tov. Now, it could be some of you who have... Now let's talk about the Shabbos mode oven. The Shabbos mode oven has some wonderful things and one thing that the majority of the postgim have rejected. In terms of the fact that you could leave it on for more than 12 hours, that's wonderful. In terms of the fact that there's no digital display and no lights and no automatic fan when you open and close the oven, that's wonderful. The issue that the postgim deal with in terms of the Star K Shabbos mode oven is that Rav Heinemann suggested that a way to create a grumma. Which, wait a second, grumma is usually aser, isn't it? So says Rav Heinemann, here we have an iser of turning on a flame, which as we started, is only an iser d'rabbanan. And an iser d'rabbanan, done big grumma, and letzorech ochel nefesh, you have grumma. You have an iser d'rabbanan with grumma, letzorech mitzvah, the compilation of those three facets coming together makes it mutter according to everybody. And Rav Heinemann says that you could have that by creating a grumma switch that when you press the buttons to raise the flame on Yom Tov, what you're doing is you are just setting a situation up that as the oven system cycles through, it picks up that a change in the status was made by you, and then it will turn on its own. Therefore, that would be grumma, l'tzorech ochel nefesh, on something that anyway is only drabanan, lighting a fire. That's Rav Heinemann's kula. However, the majority of the posts can reject this kula and say, when is something considered grumma? Something's grumma only when it's koach achram urav bo. If you have a system that's set up l'chatchila to press a button and it turns on, that's not called grumma. Even if the way you set that system up l'chatchila is that you press this, then it realizes itself that something was shifted, was changed, the post can say, that's not koach achram urav bo. You're setting up a system that you press a button, it turns on. And therefore, the most poskim say that even though the lamdas should work, that it's a grumma, l'tzorech ochel nefesh, b'nes d'rabbanan, but this is simply not what grumma is called. That's the problem with the Shabbos mode oven. Let's talk about opening the door to an oven. So in terms of Shabbos, just so you know, Rabbi Neuberger holds that if you have an oven that's sometimes on, it's sometimes off, That's how ovens work. It's it maintains a state of 350 degrees, let's say, and it goes on, it cycles on and off. The flames cycle on and off. The problem is, let's say when you, the oven would be off. When you pull the door open, cold air rushes in, psik resha, you turn, you cause the cold air to go in, it now dropped to 320, psik resha, you're causing the fire to be reignited. That would be aser, psik resha would be aser, let's just say, deraisa on Shabbos. Just so you know, Rabbi Willig, who did not give the shir, holds that it's mutar l'chatchila. Rabbi Willig holds that when you open the door of an oven, it's no different than opening the front door of your house when you have the air conditioner or the heater on in the winter. Yes, some cold air will seep in, and as the cold air seeps in, it may cause the flame to go on, it may cause your HVAC system to be ignited, maybe it will, maybe it won't, at some point. It's not a psik resha, it's really a machlokes hametzias, whether you could do some checking with your own oven, if it's a psik resha or not. So halach l'maaseh, you have to realize that can you open the door of an oven on Shabbos? Rav Neuberger says it's a psik resha and aser, and Rav Willig says mutar l'chatchila. Okay, but that's all talking about opening it up on Shabbos. But on Yontif, everybody would agree that since lighting the fire l'chatchila as we began is at most an Issa d'Rabbanan, so it would be a psik resha. On a sign that's only Issa d'Rabbanan. But Tzorach Mitzvah, you hear that? Psik resha, because you're opening the door, causes the thing to go on. On an Issa d'Rabbanan, because it's Yontif. And as a Tzorach Mitzvah, that would be mutar l'chatchila, even if it will indeed cause the fire to go on. Next point. What about asking a guy to turn the oven on? So let's think. Being Moledish, as we said again five times already, is only Asid Rabbanan. Asking a guy is an Asid Rabbanan, and it's for my Yontif meal. It's Shvus to Shvus B'Makom Mitzvah. Theoretically, you should be able to ask the guy to turn it on. However, to determine, to define this as a Tzorach Mitzvah, it has to be that the reason why you're asking the guy to do it is because you need it for mitzvah purpose. But if the reason why you needed to ask the guy to turn it on was to save money, because you didn't want to leave it on from Erev Yontif because you wanted to save yourself $1.62 in gas charges, so that's not a Tzorach Mitzvah. So you have to sort of look, the way Rabbi Neuberger says, you have to look at the motivation for not leaving the oven on all of Yontif. Is it because you wanted to save $1.62 of gas? That's not a good enough reason to make it Tzorach Mitzvah. However, if it's a Shavuos, this comes up. Shavuos, it's boiling hot. You don't want to have a flame on all Shavuos long. Or you have kids around. You don't want to leave a flame on with kids in the house. It's not safe, or even without kids, somebody feels unsafe. So then we'd have the cool of a shvus, the shvus, but makom mitzvah, to allow a guy to turn the oven on Yontif. That usually would come out. If you're going out Friday, you're going out the first night of Yontif, so you don't need it. But you only need it for lunch the next day, so you want to turn it off before Yontif. And then Yontif morning, you want the guy to turn it on. Of course, you're not going to get into bishul issues, because that's talk about just heating food up, not bishul akam issues. That would be mutter if you have a good motivation.
You mentioned safety, if someone feels unsafe. Is that subjective or objective?
Let's talk about the next point. Until now we talked about opening the door. Now we're going to talk about lowering the flame. Now, lowering the flame is not l'chol l'tzorach l'chol nefesh, right? You never, in most cases, you will lower the flame because if you don't want it to burn, so take it off the flame. If you're lowering it, usually you're lowering it to save money, to save fuel. That would be aser. However, if you do want to keep your food warm, but you don't want it to get burned, so there is a machlokas. Machlokas, the Mishnah Berurah says, you're not allowed to lower the flame. Better yet, turn on a new flame. Of course, being mamshich eish, not being madlik l'chila. Better to turn on a new flame that's small than to lower a big flame that is not, the lowering was not there by Tzorach L'chol Nefesh. However, we don't pass like that. I mean, Ramosha is a kula that most people rely on, that there's no need to turn on a second flame if you need a low flame. Rather, just lower the flame that you have. In terms of turning the flame off entirely, although Ramosha has an oral tradition that it's permitted, he never put into writing, the minhag in Klal Yisrael, if you're not from the Lower East Side, is that we do not turn off a flame on Yom Tov. That's the end of ovens. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam she'hakol nehyeh bedvaro. Let's now talk about keeping 2 days of Yontif. The minhag since the time of the Gaonim was to keep 2 days of Yontif, Yontif Shein Shagalias, if you're an American visiting Eretz Yisrael. What's this based on? The Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that whenever you have a certain minhag, and you go to some place where there's a different minhag, you follow the minhag makom she'yatzeh misham. We know that Yontif Sheni is Hizaru v'minhag av'aseichem v'yadeichem, is a din of minhag, And therefore, you should follow the minhag sheyatzei misham, which is, I have the minhag of coming from America to keep 2 days. Now that I'm in a place where in Eretz Yisrael, where the minhag is to keep one, I should follow my original minhag to keep 2 days. That's what the main psak is. Of course, you have the Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi is mechadesh, that which we say, that we only follow minhag makam sheyatzei misham, if I could continue to maintain that minhag, lechomra. But if my keeping that original minhag where I came from is going to cause kulas, like, I'm going to make a bracha on matzah on the second night of Pesach. I'm going to make a bracha levatala because I'm keeping a second day. I'm going to violate Baal Tosef by keeping a second, an eighth day of Yontif or something like that. So if I'm going to violate Averas by being machmir from the Makon Shiyatz Misham, then maybe then we wouldn't say that one follows Minag Makon Shiyatz Misham. That chesh of the Chacham Tzvi is rejected by most posts, including the Yaivetz, his son, right? Yaivetz Yaakov Emden Ben Tzvi. His father was the Chacham Tzvi. So the Kul of the Chacham Tzvi was rejected by the Yaivetz's own son. Rabbi Yashav holds that the Chacham Tzvi is not even a Shitas Yachid as a Snifla Hakel. Shlomo Zalman is a little more lenient. He says, as a Snifla Hakel, one could be Metzarifet. But in general, the posts can assume one has to keep 2 days of Yontif, despite the fact that sociologically, perhaps, people, Balabatim, confuse a Rav's position of keeping Yontif on his stance about Tzionut or about other, he's just being stomped, being machmir for no reason. And therefore, fine. Next point of the Shir, the final, third and last topic of the Shir was showering on Yontif. Showering, there's obviously the issue of Bishul, not Bishul directly, but Psik Resha of Bishul when you turn on hot water. That causes cold water to come into the boiler. And Bishul is usually mutter, but that's if it's Melechas Ochel Nefesh. Melechas Ochel Nefesh is only defined by something that is Tzorech L'chol Nefesh. However, washing your hands, your face, your feet might be Shavu L'chol Nefesh. The question is washing a full body, is that considered Shavu L'chol Nefesh? And therefore, would that constitute something that would be a Melechas Ochel Nefesh, which would be permitted, in which case Bishul would be permitted? That's not Pashut. Secondly, there's a totally unrelated Isser, and that's the Isser of Drabanim, Gzeres Havalonim, not to go to a merachatz on Shabbos and Yomtiv. It's machlokes if it applies to Yomtiv also, because most folks can assume that lahachmir, that there is a gzeres balanim on Yomtiv as well, because those dishonest mikvah tendons used to put, light things up on Yomtiv, Shabbos and Yomtiv. Rabbi Neuberger's position was a pshara to be makel if you have a 3-day Yomtiv and a person's mitztayer, then if it's Yomtiv sheni, again, I'm saying lots of different criteria. 3-day Yontif, and he's mitztar. Thirdly, and it's Yontif Sheini, which is only Drabanan anyway. And fourthly, it's a shower. And fifthly, it's only lukewarm, so we just had 5 different criteria to be Mekel. Then Rabbi Neuberger would be willing to be Mekel. And the reason is because he's being mitzarev. First of all, Yontif Sheini is only Drabanan. Secondly, the fact that you're mitzar might itself make it over Shabbat L'chol Nefesh, which would be a heter to make it into L'chol Nefesh. Thirdly, the Gzeres HaBadlanim, some hold that it's only by a bathhouse, not by a bathtub, not by a shower, so a shower you won't be more makel. Another machlokas, if Gzeres HaBadlanim only applies to hot water, even to lukewarm water. Another machlokas, if the whole Gzeres HaBadlanim applies to Yontif at all, or only to Shabbos. So with all these sirufim, Rabbi Neuberger would be makel on the second of Yontif, but Malcolm it's tire to shower in lukewarm water. That was the first shir. Let's go now to fasting on Yom Kippur, Rabbi Neuberger's shiur about fasting on Yom Kippur. Somebody who missed his test and he had to take it late, and I marked it just recently, and I clarified with him. I told him one of the questions that he got wrong, and I said, the answer that you wrote on your test is, if you paskid what you wrote on your test, you would be chayv kares. So, which is true. A case which we'll see in just a few seconds, which I asked him about, and he got it wrong, and I said, you'd be chayiv. I mean, you have to figure out. It's either kares or, I guess, shir might be just an isidoraisa. The other side is you're killing the guy. So, it's fasting on kares is very, 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 very important because you're dealing with pikuach nefesh and on one hand, kares on the other hand, and you have to be that fine line in between. Fine. So, fasting on Yom Kippur in general, the Shulchan Aruch says in our Rebbeim Paskin that, like the Mishnah and the Shulchan Aruch, that a Mu'beres fasts on Yom Kippur. Of course, keep in mind, the halacha of eating on Yom Kippur is for pikuach nefesh, both for the mother as well as for a fetus. An unborn fetus equally one is able to risk life for, even for a fetus less than 40 days old. For this, for pikuach nefesh, it is considered life even below 40 days old. Now, let's begin with a wild kula of Dayan Fisher Zatzal. Dayan Fisher wrote that mu'uberes is pregnant women should not fast Yom Kippur because it's chalish sadoros, and many women had hapalos. So therefore, all pregnant women should eat pachas mikashir. Now, the poskim went berserk against this psak. Now, it really happens to be that, I mean, I think I never mentioned, but it really is true, that before a fast, Rabbi Dayan Fisher had a gigantic line of ladies lined up at his Beis Hora to get psak, because everybody in the world knew that Dayan Fisher, if you wanted a kula, for fast, women fasting on any time, you always went to Dayan Fisher, and he had the longest lines from in front of his Beis Hora when he was, I think they switched off, when he was passing, that's when he had the long lines. So the Rabbi Bleich and other poskim suggest numerous critiques of Dayan Fisher's concern that many mu'baros are mapilos. First of all, three basic categories of disagreement. First of all, his data is questionable for 3 points. A, is it really nechleshu adoros? I thought we take vitamins, we take folic acid, we do much better eating now. Maybe we're stronger during pregnancy. Secondly, when there was surveys and experiments that were done in terms of what fasting causing women in Ramadan and Yom Kippur and Shari Tzedek, there is a statistically insignificant change of danger to births because of fasting. Thirdly, even if Dayan Fisher did have numerous women who did warm up pilos, maybe included in his population were people who anyway shouldn't have fasted in the first place. Maybe there were some high-risk situations that any Rav would have passed that they should eat. That's the first category of critique. Second category of critique is the Maram Shik. Even though we consider 1 in 10 to be Safek, Pikach Nefesh, 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000, but to say that there are 5 people out of hundreds of thousands who Taka did have Hapala, maybe that wouldn't be called a Pikach Nefesh or Safek Pikach Nefesh. Maybe there's a certain cutoff that even these few women who did enter risk, that's not sufficient to qualify statistically as a Safek Pikach Nefesh. Finally, the third critique is, how could you say Nishtanu HaTvayim on your own when something that the Mishnah Paskins, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, all the Gedolim have Paskined until you, Dayan Fisher, all of a sudden you're getting up by yourself without a kibbutz Chachamim to Paskin Nishtanu HaTvayim. And therefore, Chacham Ovadia says that even on Tisha B'Av he wouldn't even be Meka like Dayan Fisher, certainly not on Yom Kippur. Okay. So now that we have women, pregnant women, fasting on Yom Kippur, that's if it's a normal pregnancy. What happens if there are specific situations, complications, as we'll see, that you as the Rav will have to communicate both with the pregnant woman and often her doctor to see, is this a normal pregnancy in which we follow the Shulchan Aruch that women will fast while they're pregnant, or this is an exception to that general and there might be room to be meka for her to either drink or to drink b'shiurim. Before we begin, the single most dangerous well-known fallacy in halacha is that drinking shiurim is only asur d'rabbanan. I had a conversation with a doctor, a religious doctor, who told a woman who had a urinary tract infection or propensity to urinary tract infection, since you're going to be uncomfortable if you're not drinking liquids to hydrate yourself, drink pachas mikashir. That is an isur d'oraisa. He had a frum doctor tell his patient to do an isur d'oraisa for every sip that she took throughout Yom Kippur. And I don't know how many other religious patients, how many other Jewish patients he has, but every patient that he tells that to, he's violating his rights. There's no, I spoke to him. I said, is there any danger for a woman who has the propensity to get a urinary tract infection? He said, absolutely not. I'll just give her a pill the next day and she'll be fine. Okay. Obviously, if it's an infection, that could be bad. I'm not talking about that, but just keep in mind, a lot of people think that drinking pachas mikashir is nisa d'rabbanan. That's untrue. It's nisa d'oraisa. Fine. What are the situations that warrant a woman to be makel if she's pregnant? Number one, if there is a previous miscarriage that might have been connected to dehydration or fasting, or if there were two undiagnosed miscarriages that, you know, if you know it was because she fell down, that caused miscarriage, that's not to talk about it. The two undiagnosed, or one, even if it's connected to dehydration or fasting. Second reason would be if she's at specific risk in her pregnancy for preterm delivery. discuss with the doctor. In the seventh or eighth, number three, in the seventh or eighth month, and she already has some labor pains, are we worried that the fact that she's lacking liquid, might that cause a danger for the baby to come out, or when it's not good for that to happen? Number four, what happens if in general she gets dehydrated easily? You have a girl that she faints every other year on Shavuot or Batamas, and all of a sudden now she gets married, she's pregnant, maybe she gets she's in danger of dehydration even without being pregnant. Certainly she's pregnant. I had one of those this year. Number five, a woman who vomits. So apparently, yes, the doctors, but what Rabbi Neuberger's studying has indicated that a woman who vomits twice is not at risk of dehydration. A woman who vomits a third time, three times, is yes, at risk of dehydration. Big Yisod, and this is, of course, important for the rabbi to shift his rabbinical hat to his social worker hat, is to convince people that it's sometimes more important to stay home and stay in bed and sleep the day through, sleep Yom Kippur through, then take a little sip of water once in a while and be in shul from beginning to end. You have that conversation numerous times every Erev Yom Kippur. Rav Shlomo Zalman, a very important point that Rav Shlomo Zalman says, if you stay home a whole Yom Kippur and that enables you to drink one shear, half an ounce, one less sip of water, that's already a reason. I mean, you saved yourself from Nisa Deraisa. That's already a reason to stay home. Again, continue with the list of situations for a woman to, pregnant woman to break her fast, early bleeding. Of course, dehydration, as we were pointing out. And if she's in her ninth month and gets labor pains, that's machlokas. We were asked. Diane Fisher said pregnant women in general could always break their fast. Diane Fisher here is more machmir. He says, once you're in the ninth month, what's the problem? You'll have a baby? Good. Go have a baby. You're in your ninth month anyway. Other poskim, Nevinsel says, but she has to make sure that she has strength to give birth, and therefore he would be able to drink. So the way Rabbi Neuberger takes, he sort of has a pshara position that if it's later in the day, many hours after the Suda Sarasekas, then maybe Rabbi Neuberger would let her drink. But if it's, she's going to labor an hour after the Suda Sarasekas, so she's plenty of food, plenty of liquid in her, no reason to fast just because she's in labor. Obviously, if the doctor says any other reason that there needs to be fasting will be dangerous, obviously you talk to the doctor. In general, whenever there is a situation of chashash of dehydration for any human being, man, woman, child, pregnant, nursing, not nursing, male, dehydration is a chashash of konos nefashos. People could die from dehydration. Therefore, if there's a situation of dehydration, chashash dehydration, then one permits drinking, of course, starting b'shiurim, if that will be sufficient. If you have the choice between either drinking b'shiurim the whole yontif, the whole Yom Kippur, or trying to fast, and you might make it, but if you do have to break your fast, you're going to have to drink a lot, then the poskim say, if there's even an outside chance you might make it through the whole yontif without drinking at all, you should try. Even if it means that when you end up being dehydrated, you're going to have to drink a lot, more than a shiur, that will be the right way to go. Try to fast. Of course, anybody who has the risk of dehydration you have to know what the symptoms of dehydration are. Symptoms of dehydration are heart palpitations, severe, a unique kind of severe headache, different than other kinds of headaches, feeling faintness, feeling dizzy even when you're sitting down. If you feel dizzy when you stand up, so don't stand up, lie down. But even when you're sitting down, that's a chashash pikuach nefesh for anybody, and in that case, anybody should do pikuach nefesh. I should do shiurim. I had a young lady, talmida of mine, who she was nursing, and at the end of the fast, no one was home. She was with her baby alone. At the end of the fast, she didn't want to eat. She didn't want to eat, and she realized that the baby was over there, and she couldn't stand up. The whole world was spinning around her, and she couldn't. Her baby was crying in the other side of the bedroom. She couldn't get from where she was to the other side of the bedroom. She was obviously severely dehydrated. And she broke her fast to drink because she was collapsing. And then she felt terrible that she broke her fast. So I found out months later, but I told her, no, you were dehydrated. You were supposed to drink in that situation, not because you were uncomfortable, not because you couldn't reach your baby, but because you were dehydrated. Okay. In terms of next point, we're finished pregnant women. Let's go to nursing women. In general, this is tough. You have to, nursing women are sometimes, especially if the first baby, they're very super overprotective. And sometimes the emotions overcome the chesechel in this area.
Yeah.
If a baby gets aggravated, okay, so give the baby formula. Baruch Hashem, we have lots of kinds of formula nowadays, even though mothers don't like giving the formula. However, when could you be miklat? If the baby doesn't take formula, even though you try. And the baby the mother doesn't have any milk. And the baby is crying. And you have lots of hours to go, that might be the only time that the mother should drink. But if you could just give the baby formula, even though the baby never tried it yet, so now's the time to try. Okay. Just in general, in terms of knowing, in terms of taking pills on Yom Kippur, if you could swallow it, that water, that's not breaking your fast. I tell it to people all the time, even on Yom Kippur. If you need to, then you could always ruin the water. If you need to take it with a little bit of water, so you could always ruin the water a little bit with some dish detergent. The person say you could even take the pill itself and let it sort of soak in the water, so the water is a little bit achy. That also, if necessary, if Rechol Hashem Basakana, Ein Basakana would also permit drinking that little bit of water to help the pill go down. That's the end of that shir. Okay, next year, let's talk about Rabbi Konigsberg's shir on Dalet Minim. So, there's a halacha called taking an esrog. What's an esrog? An esrog means is a murkav an esrog or not? So it's a machlokas. Murkav, the reason why it's possible, the Levush says, it's not possible because it's anything, there's a question with its status, but it's a mitzvah b'avera. You made it through harkav, which is an issa d'oraisa. Magaram says no, it's a murkav is not a pure esrog, therefore it's a problem. The Rishonim gives Simonim what constitute a kosher esrog that's built in murkav, that it has blitos, the ukats on the bottom is shakua deep inside, the klipa is thick, the seeds are vertical, as opposed to lemons, but Chasam Sofer says that we don't rely on these simonim themselves, we try to rather rely on a mesores to get to know the paradise to assure ourselves that it hasn't been murkav. However, the badat is, which is usually machmir, when it comes to food, badat is very good to rely on. When it comes to esrogim, badat is whatever, everybody, they're all badats, basically. Badats relies only on simonim. Basically, they'll take some esrogim, cut them in half. If they see that there's a thick skin, and they see that there are bumps on it, and they see that there are, you know, seeds in a certain direction, they'll just be machshir the paradise. Keep that in mind. Let's talk about some of the psulim of the Dalet Minim. So, says the Mishnah, nitla pitmaso is pasul. So what is a pitam? The tiny ball on top of the stem, that's the shashanta, that's going to be kosher according to most Rishonim. The only problem would be if the stem underneath it falls off, then it would be pasul. How much of the stem has to fall off? Well, that's machlokas. The Taz says that the whole thing has to fall off to the extent that there's even a hole, meaning it's a psul chaser in a sense. Some are machmir that even if it just partially, even if part of the stem falls off. And some say, you know, in the middle, that the whole stem has to fall off to be pasul, but even if there's no hole, how do we paskin? We are machmir, even though the Ramah is machmir if the little bowl on top falls up, but the Mishnah Berurah is mekel, and Mishnah Berurah paskin is a tremendous kula that even if the little bowl on top, the shashanta, falls off, if you have a mehudar esrog, use your mehudar esrog that had the shashanta fall off better than somebody else's esrog that's less mehudar. But if a part of your stem fell off, then you should avoid your esrog even if it is mehudar. Now, even though we are talking about the pitam falling off, this is all a problem of the first day when you need the kichatama, when there's a psul of chaser. However, after the first day, the psul of chaser doesn't apply. Chaser is only on the first day. V'kachtan lechem, v'kichatama by Yom HaRishon. Now, when it comes to something being a psul of hadar, hadar is machlokas if it's only a psul on the first day of law of seven. Therefore, when you have something like Yavesh, Tosfos says, is pasul all 7 days because Hadar is a psul of all seven. The Rambam says no. Hadar also is only a psul, like Lekichatama. According to the Rambam, both Chaser and Hadar are both are only on the first day. How do we paskin? It's machlokes. The Shulchan Aruch is meka like the Rambam that the psul of Chaser and Hadar, they're only on the first day. However, the Rambam is machmir in the case of Hadar, that Hadar would be pasul all 7 days. So halach lemaisa, if you have the nitla pitmaso, there's a Magen Avraham says it might not just be chaser, it might be a psul of hadar as well. Hadar is pasul all 7 days. So Mishnah Berurah says we have the following sfek sveika. If the pitam falls off And if it's the first day, so it's either psulah fachaser, hadar, you're messed up. If it's on day, you know, the end of Sukkot, then let's look at the following svek sveka. Maybe the psul of nitla pitmas is only chaser, which is only the first day. Great. And even if you hold that it's a psul of had, that even if you hold nitla pitmas is a psul of hadar, well, that itself is a machlokas. Some say it's also only on the first day. So you have a svek sveka that will be matir using the hesug, even if the stem falls off on the latter days of Sukkot. That's the end of nitla pitmas. Let's talk about the next topic. What about a shinui mara? If you have a shinui mara, discoloration, so chazazis, the Gemara says that that's only a psul if it's berubo. However, even if it's two or three dots, but in certain places, that would also be a psul because of that would not be hadar. And this chazazis, which the pasuk says that there's some physical, it's not just a discoloration, there's some texture to it, they're like blisters or pimples. The Poskim say, the Rishonim say that applies, that psul that we're saying is either rov or even if it's less than rov, it's just it's two or three different places, that would extend the Rishonim extend it even to black or white dots if the two or three dots are as follows. Two or three dots, if you would put a circle around them, you draw a circle around those two or three dots, that circle encompassing the two or three dots encompass the majority of either the circumference or the majority of the surface area, then even though it's not, even though the two, three dots themselves are a small minority, but if that area that the encircling would include, the inscribing would include, would be the majority of the area, the majority of the circumference, that would also be a psul of a chisar and of hadar. Fine. However, that's talking about if it's on the body of the esrog. If you have this chazazes, this discolorate, this shinui mara on the chotem is pasul afil b'mashu. What's the chotem? Here we have a machlokas rishonim. The Ram says it's only the bottom of the pitten. The Rashi says it's when the slope begins below the pitten. We follow the Rush that says once you get to that point on the esrog's body where there's an upward slope, that's more such that if you're holding an esrog, it's where you it's facing upwards so that your eyes would hit it. That would be a psul. That would be considered the chotem, and therefore there. A shinui mara would be afil b'mashu, and we wouldn't have to get into those two, three dots, majority, rov. Fine. Bletlach, which are just scabs that were punctured by a thorn that subsequently grew over that, the Maril says it's not a mara esrog, and it should be pasul either berov or it's on the chotem, even b'mashu. However, the Chumash Hadashim, which we pass and like, says it is a mara esrog, and it's kosher, even if it's a rove with a scab, with a bletlach, or even if it's on the chot, and that's how we paskin. Fine. In terms of green, the Gemara said, the Mishnah says, Yorok Ikarti is pasul, Ikarti is a leek, even though the Zohar says that green is good, but that's because green is good, which the Bikurei Yaakov says green, Yorok, I'm sorry, the word Yorok in the Zohar means yellow. So yellow is good, and the Hasidim who follow the Zohar that they want a green esrog, that's wrong, because Yarok in the Zohar means yellow. The psul is, if it's green, the psul is, I'm sorry, am I confusing something? If it's green, that the Zohar says, when the Zohar says you should take yarok, that means yellow. But were it to be actually green, that would be more of a problem. That's why Rav Shechter is exceedingly machmir. If you ever have a nice green esrog that you bought for $150 from Chassidus Shayir, and you bring it to Rav Shechter, he's going to say it's pasul gomer, so either don't get a green esrog, or if you get a green esrog, don't show it to the shechter. Next point, let's talk about the lulav. Machloka tiyomes. Machlokas rishonim, which is machlokas ramam rif, is the psul of machloka tiyomes that the rove of the leaves are split, or is it just the middle leaf is split? The mechaber and the svarim are very makel. They say the psul is only if the rove of the leaves are split, and we Ashkenazim, or I'm sorry, not we, but those Ashkenazim among us, the Ramah is machmir, even if just the middle one is split, that's already going to be a psul.
So if you find one, you can come to me and I'll say it's kosher.
Right. Thank you for our resident. It's very nice. But you're also a town of Shechter, so you pass our green assortment as well. How much is Nechlika? So here's a poskim. There's Machlokas on poskim. So most Rishonim say the Nechlika Tiyomis, that's a psul, is if it's rove of the leaf. The Ran, however, brings the Yeshon, who says, no, Yalach Nechka even be Miyuto. What does Miyuto mean? So here you have the Chumrah of the Chumrahs, the Chayadam that's cited in the Mishnah Berurah, that even is a mashahu. Why? Why is there missing a mashahu of the tiamas being together? A problem could be it's a psul chaser, and therefore it's not like chatama. Could be because we're worried that even if there's a mashahu, it will spread lower and it will split even below that. The Gra, however, says you don't have to be machmir for that miuto. You don't have to worry that about a miut. In general, people try to be as good as they can in terms of aiming for as much of a miut as they can. Hemnik, however, if there is a V shape, such that you put it down, it doesn't come together, it stays separated, that's going to be a psul, even a masho. That's really where the real avoda in checking lulavimar, knowing the difference between a hemnik and a miut of nechlika hatiyomis. If a lulav is kafuf, it's pasul. The question is, what does kafuf mean? Is it only that the shedra itself is kafuf, or even some of the leaves are kfufim? So that brings us to a knepel, when the top of the leaves are just bent over, like, you know, sort of like a thud, like your finger, just very top is bent down. So the Rush says that that's great because it's just in the leaves, it's not in the shedra, so it's not kafuf, it's not the psul of the Mishnah, and it's even better because you could be sure that the tiyomis is not nachlika. However, the Ran says that no, even a knepel is kafuf even though it's in the alim of themselves, not in the shedra, and that would be a psul mamish. Okay, let's now go finish the lulav, and now let's begin hadasim. The pasuk says anaf eitz avos, they are braided, and therefore the Gemara says that they have to be mishulashim. What is the din of mishulashim? So Rashi is machmir and says they have to come out of the same exact point. The three leaves at every every level of the height of your hadas have to come out from the exact same point. Other are more mekel, that as long as they are the way the Chazanish explains it, as long as if you would draw a line around the circumference of your hadas stick, and the basis of all three leaves at that point are crossed, even though one is a tiny bit above the other, but the one line would sort of draw together all three of those bases of the leaves, that would be sufficient, and we make it like that. Okay, that is enough for the shir on Dalet Mina. Let's talk about electricity on Shabbos. Okay, we have to keep in mind that when you're dealing with electricity, before you get to the figuring out what if is electricity, you have to realize that you might be doing malachas like plowing, like cooking, like bishul, you know, turning on a light if it's an incandescent light. Even if we assume electricity is nothing, I don't know if we'll say that, but an incandescent bulb is itself havara because you're making the metal glow. Might be bishul, might be havara. Two verses in the Rambam. You're turning on a tractor, so that's choresh aside from the electricity component. Okay, so what is electricity? The one point that Rabbi Packer wanted to focus to highlight is that just because you say electricity is X, that doesn't mean it's not anything that the other poskim say. Electricity can be simultaneously a violation of numerous different shitas, of numerous different poskim. It doesn't mean just it's either A or B. But let's see, the earliest poskim, the Beis Yitzchak, said that it's Eish, that you're lighting a fire when you're turning on an electrical circuit, and that we definitely don't assume. We don't assume that there's fire in our wires. Chazanish is where the more of the discussion is, because the Chazanish says that it's tikkun mana. What's tikkun mana? Well, even though in general there's no binyan bekelim, well, let's start like this. It's machlokas if there's binyan bekelim. What do you mean? The Gemara says there's no binyan bekelim. Right, so Rashi says there's no binyan bekelim ever. Tosafot says if you make something and you take it from A to Z, you make a whole kli, that would be considered binyan even bekelim. Binyan bekelim, by the way, would probably be a violation of Makkah B'Patish, not of Bona. Bona is in the Karka. I believe that's correct. I might be wrong. So the concern of the Chazanish is that when you're making something, don't think that it means, when you're creating the circuit, when I was little, I used to think that the Chazanish was saying, you're making a circuit, you just made a circuit. No, that's not the Bona that we're talking about. That might be. But certainly if it's in the walls of a house, it might be Binyan B'Mechuber, because you're connecting a circuit that's connected to the house. The point of the Chazanish is being mechadesh is that you're taking a kli that is useless, a fan that doesn't have electricity in it, is useless. And therefore, by you making it usable, you are giving it its life. That's called Makkah B'Patish or Tikkun Mana. That might be called Binyan B'Kelim. But not because physically you're attaching something, you're putting this, you're completing a circuit. That's not the point. It's not the complete circuit that's the point. It's the fact that now you have this dead fan that became a lively cooling fan. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, wait a second. This, even if you want to argue, let's take one point at a time. You were worried that maybe flipping a switch in the wall is bona b'mechubar, because we know even though ain't binyan b'kelim, but there is bona b'mechubar. But wait a second. If you have a door, somebody just walked into the door, right? That doesn't make him, by him opening the door or closing the door, that when he closed the door, that wasn't bona b'mechubar. That's opening and closing a door. So it's flipping a switch, even if it's in the wall. That's darku b'kach. That's not bona b'mechubar. Oh, and you want to say that it's creating a kli, and more than just creating a kli. We'll add one point to the chaznish. Also, the fact that you're giving it life, it's so significant that it's called teka. Teka is when you connect something very tightly, that even if you hold no binyan b'kelim, but teka might, yes, be considered a binyan, because you're doing it so strongly and tightly. Wait a second, if you flip on a switch, you're calling that teka because it's so chashev? What do you mean? In a flash, I could flick off the switch. The whole point of teka, why teka might constitute a binyan, is because it's so chashev, it's so strongly connected. But says Rishon Zalman, you can just switch it off just as easily. So how can you call that teka? Obviously, the Chazon Ish would respond that teka is not a physical strength; it's a meaningful. It's a meaningful connection. You're connecting something in a meaningful way, giving it life. That's the point, not just the physical connection that you could switch on or off. In general, most of the YU poskim are assume, like Rishon Zalman, that electricity is derabanan. Although there are some major posts who still assume that you should be choshev for the chazanish, then it might be nisa deraisa. In general, you'll find many balabatim do assume that it's also deraisa. It's a wonderful mistake for them to live. It's a wonderful perspective for them to live with. They could live, I may have asked them, assuming that electricity is deraisa, and I don't think you failed in your job as a rav. Ashreichem and ashrei for that community. Now we're, just to give a certain Havana, a very strong Havana to the Chazon Ish, offered by Rav Asher Weiss, based on a Mefurish Yerushalmi. How could it be that Tikkun Mana, which we know has certain Gedarim, why should making a fan from a blog of plastic and metal to turn into this thing we call a fan, why should that be called Tikkun Mana or Binyan Bekelim? So there's Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says that the Amoraim were looking for, they worked, they were learning, and they looked at each Maisa, they saw each Tolda, and they pinned it onto the Av Malacha that it was associated with. And then they came to some Toldas, and they didn't know where to pin it on. They said, oh, let's just call this Makkah B'Patish. Wait a second. I thought it works the other way. You start with an Av Malacha, and then you figure out what's similar to that will be the Tolda. It seems from the Yerushalmi that Chazal had an idea what they wanted to aser, what should be a violation of the Issa D'Oraisa of Malacha, and they just had to categorize them. When they couldn't categorize it, then they put it under Malacha of Tikkun Mana. That might be what the Chazon Ish was saying, that Makkah B'Patish is you're doing something Chashav on Shabbos. You're creating something Chashav on Shabbos. You're creating a fan. You're making a fan work. So where are we going to put it? I don't know where to put it. So let's just put it in Makkah B'Patish. That might be, that Yerushalmi might be the Havana, Rav Asher Weiss suggests, behind the electricity as understood by Chazon Ish. Rav Schechter has an interesting understanding of what electricity is. Gemara talks about a tzina sha'alu ba'kas kasin. If you have a plugged up pipe and you unplug that pipe, that's an iser, I think it's an iser drabanan. So similarly, if you have a wire and the electrons are not able to flow and you allow the wire, the electrons to flow, that might be a similar iser drabanan of unplugging the pipe. Then Rabbi Packer, we finished what is the issue of electricity, let's go to the next point. Rabbi Packer got into the issue of semiconductors, which, thanks to Rabbi Packer, I know what they are now. Basically, if you have something that's on the whole time, but it's deactivated when you touch it, like a mouse on a computer, a screen on a touch screen, so you're not making the circuit, but you're changing the resistance to allow more or less current to flow. So there, that makes things a little better, because on one hand, you're not making any circuit that hasn't been here. On the other hand, you are bringing something to Mimavas L'chayim. So it's a question how to look at that. Similarly, when you change the volume, you change the brightness, there it's much more kal because it might not be, it might still be awesome because, you're making it do what you need to do, which may be the understanding of the Chazon Ish. But if you hold it just molded, one of the other sheets, which I'm sorry, you can put this back in your notes, five lines back, another sheet that says that just like creating a reach, molded reach, is aser. So too, you know, putting electricity into your this amorphous non-physical thing like reah, you make that's aser. So too, you take this amorphous non-physical quality called electricity into an appliance that also could be like molim. So it's discussed in the base journal Beis Halakha, but he rejects it. So I don't know who said it. No, the Beis Yitzchak from the end of the 1800s. He said that it's Eish. I don't think it was Molad. I think it was Molad Reach. I think he said it's Havara. I think. Okay, changing the brightness might be better. So if you're a doctor and you have to do something better instead of turning something off and turning it on when you need it, but leave it on and just change the brightness, the electricity, the zerim once it's already on. Okay, that's sufficient for the shear on electricity. Do you want to break from Micha now or you want to do one more shear? Everyone's awake? Most people look awake. Wow.
If your voice is good, then.
Okay.
Are we skipping the one on the
sukkah? We can do sukkah. Okay. Let's do sukkah. Rabbi Konigsberg, shear on Hilchas Sukkah. So, there's a halacha that is sukkah. Okay, how big does the sukkah have to be? Machlokas, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and Rebbe. Beis Shammai says that it has to be... Am I getting this confused? Rosh Aruba v'Shulchano? Is that Beis Shammai? Beis Hillel says just Rosh Aruba? Okay, I always mix it up. So Beis Shammai says it has to be 7x7 to include Shulchano. Beis Hillel says it only has to be Rosh Aruba, which is 6. Unless I got that opposite. And Rebbe says, no, you need a din bias, which is Dalet Amos, by Dalet Amos, meaning the point of Rebbe is that you need a Dias Keva, and therefore, just like this din bias by all the other house halachas, makim, mezuzah, negibatim, you have to have a din bias of Dalet Amos, and we don't pass like that. We hold that it has to be a Rai, and therefore, we hold that it's like Beis Shammai, that it has to be 7x7. Right, we hold like Beis Shammai in this case?
Yeah, here, right.
Here, we hold like Beis Shammai, and it has to be 7x7. Okay. Let's talk about Shnai Kelech, Snar Shlish, Sefiel Tefach. Every first grade kid knows, I think I had even my kindergarten kid also knew, that you could have a sukkah with 2, 3, 4 walls. So how do you have a 2-wall sukkah? Shnai Kelech, Snar Shlish, Sefiel Tefach. Call it 2.5. So people mistake, and they think, whenever you have 2 walls, plus a Shlish, Sefiel Tefach, that's okay. That's not okay. It's only going to be a heter. If you have an L shape, if you have perpendicular lines, then you could add that third wall to be a shlish tafil tefach. And there's another requirement. That shlish tafil tefach, when you already have an L, the second requirement is that shlish tafil tefach has to be lovered to an existing wall such that you have 3.9 tfachim, or 3.5, 3.6, 3.7, 3.8 tfachim. You have the one tefach, plus you have lovered, which is the three tfachim. So you have 3 and a bit, so that 3.5 or more, so you already have a more than half of a 7 tefach wall. So that makes you like having a row of wall. That's when you could use the shlish tefil tefach. And in addition to that, you also have to do a tzuras ha-pesach above the small wall between the tefach and the corner of the standing L. Even though it's lovered, you still need a tzuras ha-pesach there. Once. So there are a lot of requirements for that shlish tefil tefach. However, if you have an L and the third wall is already 7 tfachim, that's enough on its own without a tzuras ha-pesach. But again, that's assuming it's an L shape. If it's 2 parallel walls, you can't just use a shlishes ha-fil tefach. That's the walls. Let's now look at the schach. The din of schach is that you cannot, well, the can one be sochech on with a davar, you cannot be sochech with a davar mekabel tumah. Can you rest your schach on a davar mekabel tumah? So let's talk about mekabel tumah right now. If you have something, if you have your canvas frame or your what's called the frame, your other metal frame, your fiberglass with has a metal lining on top, and you're putting the schach down directly on the metal, is that okay or not? So Mishnah Sukkah says that if you hold up your sukkah with kare hamita, a bed frame, that's machlokas tanam. Tanakama says, great. You have a beautiful sukkah. Rabbi Yehuda says it's pasul. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say it's pasul? Well, there's machlokas. Either because he holds Ein la keva. What does it mean, ein la keva? Well, maybe since it's a bedpost, you might move the bed. Or maybe it's not tall enough to give you room to move your body enough around. So it's like, that's not called keva, dick, a living. The other reason why maybe Rabbi Yehuda of the Tanaim says that it's possible to be somech your schach with kari hamita is because you're mamed b'davar hamakabel toma. And you're not allowed to be mamed b'davar hamakabel toma, right? The kari hamita, the bedpost, hamakabel toma. Now, according, again, Tanakama says it's kosher. Rabbi Yehuda says it's possible. Within Rabbi Yehuda, one opinion is because it's ein lo keva, and the second reason within Rabbi Yehuda why it's possible to be mamid yoschach on a bedpost is because it's mekabel tuma. What's the problem with being resting yoschach on top of the bedpost because it's mekabel tuma? What's the problem? The schach is not mekabel tuma. Schach is good. What's the wrong with resting on something that's mekabel tuma? Machlokes. The Ran says that if you're going to rest your kosher schach on top of something that's mekabel tuma, you might think the schach in general could be mekabel tuma, which is not correct. So you might make a mistake. Rashi says no, that it's not that we're worried you might do something, which sounds like an issur d'rabbanan, but rather that if something that's mekabel tuma is holding up your schach, so we review that your schach itself is mekabel tuma. That's more like an issur d'oraita. It's not you might think of it in a certain way. No. Something that holds up schach itself is like the schach, is the din of the schach, and that might be more of a psil d'oraisa. So how do we paskin? Well, if you remember, the whole person who's worried about any issue with holding up a sukkah with kari hamita is Rabbi Yehuda, and he's going against the Tanakama, who's a chachamim. So we should presumably pass like chachamim that this whole sugya does not even begin because everything's kosher because you're allowed to do it. You're allowed to be samei sukkaso with kari hamita. That's how the Baal HaMor paskins, that's how the Shulchan Aruch paskins, and there's no story to begin. There's no such thing as Maimon B'davar HaMekabel Tuma. However, even though the Shulchan Aruch is Mekel, most Rishonim don't hold like the Shulchan Aruch, and a pas like Rabbi Yehuda, that you're not allowed to hold up your schach b'kari hamita. But do we pass? There are different reasons for Rabbi Yehuda. Either because it's not Keva, or because Maimon B'davar HaMekabel Tuma. So the Ramban and the Ran hold that the reason taka is that reason we mentioned earlier because of maimed b'davar hamekabel tuma. So we stop here. That's the chumrah for not putting something directly on metal because of those who paskin like Rabbi Yehuda according to the tzad that it is still of maimed b'davar hamekabel tuma.
Didn't an expert mention something that was like a steer in the Shulchan Aruch?
Yes.
Okay. So
the Shulchan Aruch is sosim. So we just said that the Shulchan Aruch says it's permitted to. The Shulchan Aruch just said that it's permitted to that we paskin that you're allowed to be sochech on top of a bed frame. However, the Shulchan Aruch elsewhere brings two shitas. He's mesupik if you could rest schach directly on a ladder. What's the suffik? So Magen Avraham says the suffik is that the Mishnah Berurah is mesupik whether or not you are allowed, whether or not you have to be worried about, even though elsewhere he said there's no Isser at all, this second Shulchan Aruch, talking about resting schach on a ladder, is the Shulchan Aruch's safek, whether or not you're allowed to be, you have to be machmir for this davar hamekabel tuma or not. So that means if it's a safek of the Shulchan Aruch, what do? L'chatchil, you avoid it. B'diavad, if you did, it was kosher. The Magen Avraham himself adds that even if you assume that it's also a chatchila to rest your schach on top of metal, on top of a ladder, on top of metal, however, if you have an extra hafsik, a maimid de maimid, that would be okay, even if there would be a problem of maimid, the davar hamekabel tuma, maimid de maimid would be kosher. The Chazanish himself is mekel. However, the Chazanish says that point that the Magen Avraham was saying, that maimid de maimid is mutter, according to the Magen Avraham, I disagree with. Which is why you have the B'nai Brak sukkahs that don't have metal screws. But really, the Chazon Ish himself also holds that there's no psul at all of davar hamekabel tuma. So again, l'chatchila, a person should try to avoid maimid b'davar hamekabel tuma, and if they are in a sukkah that somebody built, you're invited to your aunt's sukkah, and you see the schach sitting comfortably on the metal frame, b'diavad, certainly it is mutter to use that sukkah. Okay, let's go to the next point. Okay, let's talk about mats. M-A-T. A mat. Machzeles. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah says that if it's manufactured, the Shechiva, for sitting, it's Mekabel Toma and Pasul. If it's manufactured to be Sichuch, then it's not Mekabel Toma and it's Kosher. All of our mats are certainly produced, manufactured with Hechsherim and all the other things, and it all certainly manufactured the Sichuch, so they're not Mekabel Toma and they should be Kosher. But if you stop and go to one of these backyard sales and somebody's selling a bamboo mat, that could be a problem because it's made to sit on. There's a separate issue with mats, and that is, forget the Kabbalah's Tuma concern, Exeras Tikra. Machlokes Tanam, if you're allowed to use planks, a plank of wood, between, everyone agrees that a plank of wood that's more than 4 tefachim wide, even though it's wood, it's possible because of Exeras Tikra, it looks like a seal. Between 3 and 4 tefachim, it's machlokes. But the Rashba says that even if you take small planks and attach them one to the other, that might also be Exeras Tikra. Rabbi Yosha says, wait, that's exactly what a mat is. A mat is little tiny bits connected so that it's wider than 4 tefachim, and that should be a psul, which is what Rabbi Yosha seems to have said. And therefore, Rabbi Yosha sounds like he wouldn't like mats. Most poskim are makel and permit mats and say they don't qualify as having Exeras Tikra because, first of all, Exeras Tikra means this looks like a ceiling. Our mats that have holes all over the place and rain coming straight through it, dripping all, 50 different places the rain is dripping through, it's not like a tikra. Secondly, it's not like a tikra because they're so flimsy and thin. And thirdly, they're bamboo, and no one around here makes bamboo roofs. Okay, that's as far as mats. When it comes to canvas sukkahs, one concern that we just mentioned is you might put the schach directly on the metal and question maimed. There's another issue that if you put the walls up, since there's a frame, you could easily put the schach on first and the walls up afterwards. That would be a psul tasav lemina osui. There's a third issue that we'll talk about now, the canvas walls themselves. The Mishnah says that a mechitza she'ena omedes bruch mitzuya is not called a mechitza. Now, what does it mean that it's not omeda? So if it moves more than 3 tvachim, meaning from its baseline, it moves 3 tvachim outside its baseline, or 3 tvachim in the other direction outside its baseline, that's a psul that it would, it's no longer lavud, and therefore that loses the shem mechitza, and that would be a psul. Now, let's say you have it tight, and it won't veer, it won't shake more than 3 tvachim. Comes Rabbeinu Peretz and says, we're still worried. Because Rabbeinu Peretz says that even if you tie it tightly and it doesn't move, there's a gzeira dilma mintiki. Maybe it will flap, that will come out, and then Rabbeinu Peretz says it should be puzzled, even if you made sure that it is pulled tight. And the Shulchan Aruch is taka machmir for this Rabbeinu Peretz. So if that's the case, a canvas wall should taka be a problem. Two solutions. One is that Meir Shechter suggests maybe if it's canvas that has those metal grommets, those circles at the end, that it's made to tie down, that might be better. Maybe a bit of Paris we make there. And the best way is just to put up strings that are lavud around the frame, three strings that are lavud to each other from the floor, to allow those strings being lavud to constitute your mechitza. But of course, if you put up your wall, then you put up your schach, and then you put up your strings, that ends up also being tasa below min ha'asu. Okay, let's finish off this shir with what is schach pasal. Schach pasul is, if you have schach pasul, the emtsa, it's a psul of 4 tefachim. Of course, it's pasul only underneath it. If you, sitting underneath the schach pasul is a problem. However, if it's less than 4 tefachim wide, then, for example, you have a metal light fixture. That's less than 4 tefachim wide. Metal is mekabel shechach pasul. However, if it's less than 4 tefachim wide, you can even sit under that shechach pasul. That's because it's only shechach pasul. However, avir, which is not 4 tefachim but 3 tefachim, perhaps it's more chomer because it's more niker. You could see the empty space. Avir, you're not allowed to sit under avir even if it's less than 3 tefachim. But wait a second, there's always avir, so you can't sit in your sukkah. Says the Rosh, the psul of sitting under avir is only if the avir is al pnei kulo. There's a full line straight down the sukkah that's all avir, you're not allowed to sit under that kind of avir, which means that whenever you build a sukkah, you should always put one bar perpendicular to the direction of your other schach to break any avir that goes mikotze el hakotze. Of course, Dofen Akuma, you cannot sit under if the Mihatsad, you could have four amos of Pasal Schach, but you're not allowed to sit under that because that's not Schach. That's the end of this section, and maybe we'll take a break now in Mincha, and then we'll continue.
So